Hi, this is Paul, and I am joined today once again by my friend John Van Donk. And John and I did a video a few months ago where we went through John's story, and John was actually the one who really prompted me to start doing meetups. And so John has very much been a partner in this whole business with me. And just this morning, early this morning, I got up and I read an email from John about the facets. I did a video a couple of weeks ago about the facets, riffing on some of the stuff that's after I'd had breakfast with John. John lives in Southern California. He comes up here fairly often. And so we talk, but he has continued to develop his facets ideas. And I liked a lot of what he had. So John, tell us where did these facets come from?
I don't know.
Did you change your mic?
Yeah, I did.
It's worse.
Oh, okay. I'll take it out again. I thought that I was doing you a favor by using my earphone.
No, it was worse.
Okay, I'll pull it back out.
This.
Oh, much better.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, now we're using the actual mic of the device.
Yeah, well, phones have pretty good mics, so.
Okay, very good. So anyway, to recap, I don't know why I'm so obsessed with facetizing or the facets of an audience, for example, Jordan Peterson's, but I think that it had occurred to me that there is a little bit of generalizing going on. When I was a pastor, I was always interested in understanding who it is that I'm preaching at or to or with, and who I was leading and who I am a pastor to, because you have to kind of understand where these people are coming from if you're going to be any kind of a leader to them. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that Jordan Peterson himself also is conscientious of who he's talking to, and I'm pretty sure that you are also. I can tell from the way you choose your topics and so forth. You have a target audience in mind, and so it occurred to me that maybe it would be a good thing to try and observe from the outside who these people are that are following Jordan Peterson and what possibly might be their motives. So yeah, I came up with a list and I send it to you, and we can talk about it if you want, or we can explore some other angles.
No, go right ahead. Why don't you jump right in?
Okay. Well, there is the, all right. I have now come up with 7 or 8 different categories of people that are interested in Jordan Peterson. And of course, by his own admission, it always starts with the millennials, as he refers to them as the buckos, the people who have had some kind of an emotional connection with him because he got to them at a moment of specific need. And I would articulate that need as perhaps people who feel at some point passed by in terms of relationship with contemporary culture, or who feel underemployed, underappreciated, and in need of affirmation, encouragement, and validation, or who in social settings perhaps feel alienated, socially awkward, or estranged from peers. Some of them, I think by listening to Jordan, he refers to them as father deprived or raised in a single female household, minimal male role modeling, and uncertain and or confused about gender roles and expectations. Perhaps a minimal sense of meaning and purpose in life, and possibly having previously, I have a guy in my own group who was self-identified as belonging to a persecuted minority or otherwise entitled to designated victim status, and also people who may in some ways be behind in terms of common markers of adulthood, including self-care, financial responsibility, and or independent living. And these people, I think, see in Jordan Peterson and his teachings a potential corrective and possibly new hope to overcome the above challenges. And I think that that's the really loyal following that almost see him as a lifeline. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of the energy behind the movement has come from that segment of the population. And I think that I think it'd be absolutely wrong to try and cast them into a particular narrow group of people such as alt-right or whatever political designation you want to give to them. I think for them it's an existential issue or an existential moment to have found somebody who speaks some word of encouragement to them And I think that that is just huge. And I think there's an enormous amount of energy behind that. But that's not the only group of people, because as you have yourself pointed out on numerous occasions, Christians have also paid attention.
Hang on, I want to talk about this.
Okay. Yeah.
You labeled them as millennial, and I think there's a big group of them that are there. They're in that developmental range. A lot are between 25 and 40, I've noted, and they're in a developmental range where they no longer have a father telling them what to do. But there might have been some gaps. I was reading somewhere. Actually, it was Richard Rohr that, you know, you recommended a book to me from Richard Rohr. And I think it was Rohr who made the comment that most men need another person besides their father to do different things. And someone else had made this point about an uncle. And so I think for that group, that is a big piece of it. On the video,
Jordan Peterson would be the uncle then.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson is the uncle. And he's given uncle advice. Yeah. But he's doing it now through YouTube and through social media and through books. And he mentioned on a video that he just put out where he and his wife, I guess their gym is about 5 minutes away from their home, got stopped 15 times on the way to the gym by strangers wanting to thank him for his work. That's phenomenal. And he mentioned that his book has sold 2.5 million copies. And again, if you go to one of his events, now I'm going to the event in January 22 in San Jose. I didn't get a VIP ticket this time, but if you go to one of those events and you get the VIP ticket, it is well worthwhile watching him meet most of the people. A lot of the people get the VIP ticket, want to thank him personally, give him a gift. Because, and I think you really articulated it well here. Many are millennials, not all. That's I think a big.
Well, it's kind of an easy and quick designation, and possibly inappropriate. But I think you corrected it very, very well. I'm going to go to his book signing on the next day or the 2 days later in Riverside, and I did actually purchase the VIP ticket, so I'll be in a position to judge the validity of your comments, but I think you're probably right on.
Pay attention and get back. I'm sure you'll have a report. You'll have a report for me. Okay. So go ahead to the second group.
Well, the second group is the people that, like yourself, noted after the initial hullabaloo about C-16 kind of blew over. They kind of went and explored a little bit more. Well, who is this guy? What does he do? What does he stand for? What has he done before? What are his various teachings, and they bumped into his biblical series. They were hot and heavy at the time, and he was kind of gearing up and ramping up that a little bit. And so here is Christians discovering that there is a rather unique and unusual hermeneutic. I don't think that we want to be so quick as to dismiss it as old-fashioned higher criticism. I think that there is more to it than that. And I think that he brought to the table an admittedly hermeneutic from below, but nevertheless well-documented. And in my own estimation, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but insofar as he sees the origin of the structure of being associated with the Logos, it is not inappropriate to say that God may very well have revealed himself not only in nature, physical nature as we know it, which we confess ourselves to be the case, but also in special revelation, when the awareness of a word, a story, a narrative arises out of our built-in structural consciousness, as Jung would have it, and with various metaphors associated with that. And so that biblical narrative may very well have arisen from below, but even as we say that, from above, because there is no such thing as below. It all comes from above. That's the only way I would say that. So then there are these tribes that I mentioned that earlier. You know, there's conservative evangelical Christians who see in Jordan Peterson the answer to our prayers, because he's going to be one of us, and he's going to become a a Bible-believing, born-again Christian, and it's only a matter of time before we can claim as our new C.S. Lewis, and we have a bona fide intellectual genius who is going to set the whole world straight about the truth of our Christian commitments and confessions. And then there is the other tribal group, usually conservative evangelical Christians, who for some reason derives great satisfaction in pointing out how Jordan Peterson is wrong and dangerously heretical. So there's that. I don't know what category you belong to, but frankly, I belong to a third group in there, and that is the people who were to some degree a little disengaged and otherwise bored with the Bible. I mean, I have a seminary degree. I read the Bible backward and forward. I preached from it for many years. It's not that the thing is unfamiliar to me, but somehow it lost some of its edge. It lost some of its critical, you know, gotcha kind of quality. Mm-hmm. And when Jordan Peterson does his own kind of gotcha, to me, he did gotcha when he laid out his theory of the humans as monkeys filled with snakes, and how deferred gratification is the same as sacrifice, and how ultimately there is only one sacrifice that really meets the all the requirements that could possibly be called upon, and he refers to that sacrifice as Jesus. Now, whether he's talking about the same Jesus that I'm talking about is a whole separate issue, but at least he lays out the groundwork, and it intrigues me to no end to engage in a different kind of conversation than what we have ordinarily limited ourselves to, and especially in our heritage, you know, the notion that the first and foremost important thing is to explain that revelation is from above, and no one else who says anything different has anything to contribute to our biblical studies. That's just great. Sorry.
That's your take on Christian Reformed tradition. That wasn't so much my experience growing up under Stan Vanderclay and Patterson, but...
No. No, and I have to be careful that I don't speak pejoratively about my own tradition. I love it dearly, and I am very much part of a Christian Reformed community right now. And I think what is really happening is I'm beginning in a whole weird way to build a new appreciation for what that community can be as a sustaining factor in a person's life, quite apart from some of the specific teachings.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, too, so you mentioned two evangelical approaches, and then the disengaged or bored. And then you have Roman Catholics and Orthodox both saying, oh, he's one of us, he hasn't just found it yet. Yep. Whereas the evangelicals are looking for conversion.
Yep.
The Orthodox and the Roman Catholics are saying, oh, he's really just one of us. And
I look at them.
And I think, I don't know.
Everybody wants to claim him though, huh?
He's... You know, if he ever does, I don't know. Again, part of Jordan Peterson has always been the Truman Show. He's fun to watch because it's, especially from a Christian perspective, because it's like, what's going to happen? Is he gonna get it baptized? Is he gonna join a church? And a lot of people are like, that'll never happen. And he can't sit still. He can't shut up. Can he be a member of the church that he's not preaching in? There are certain pastors that have that liability. We won't
mention any names.
So good. I like your treatment of there. Okay, group number three.
Yeah, then we move to the atheist, and in a way, as is true of any and all religious movements, the atheists are their own religious movement, and they come in different tribes. So there are the militant atheists who assign to Jordan Peterson the role of the smartest, most articulate apologist for the Christian faith, and interpret Sam Harris' coherent conversation with Jordan P. Peterson as evidence that even the smartest of all Christians cannot convince one of ours. So I see, you know, I mean, I can easily see how atheists, militant atheists, would look at those conversations and say, nah, Jordan Peterson cannot convince our Sam. You know, our Sam is still our man, and we're going to remain atheists to our dying day, blah, 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 blah. which is fine. I mean, to each his own. But then there is also the previously lathy atheists who never attempted to achieve a coherent perspective on their own atheism, but who find themselves inspired by Jordan Peterson to rethink their own previously unexamined assumptions about God, religion, and church. And any one of those could perhaps show up at your church or mine. I mean, that's kind of a new discovery, a new path, a new rethinking old suppositions. And then I have a third category here. Those are the atheist wannabes who grew up with deep roots in the Christian faith, but who for whatever reason became indifferent to those roots, but who now, as a result of exposure, not only to Jordan Peterson, but also to people like yourself, have found themselves re-engaging with their own religious heritage. And I think that some of your stories are just powerful testimony to that, that just to talk about the Christian life, church, the gospel, the Bible, from a slightly different angle, kind of rekindles some interest and some new enthusiasm, and it allows people, perhaps with a different tone, to re-enter that community that they were once part of.
Yeah. I think, so Adam, who runs the Think Club channel and the Adam Friended channel, he would call the militant atheists anti-theists, which I think is a good one. Previously lazy atheists, I think a number of people are going to be offended by the lazy.
Oh, that's all right. Not the first time.
So yeah, no, I think that's right. That's three groups of atheists. I think that's good. So your next category number four.
Yeah, that'd be the philosophers again of two stripes. There's probably more, but at least two stripes. I see the armchair philosophers who feel validated by Jordan's cavalier dismissal of postmodernism as a post-Marxist tool for world domination. That'd be one category. And I don't think that they take their philosophy all that serious. They just kind of, it resonates with them that he is dismissive of postmodernism. And I don't know if they or Jordan Peterson define postmodernism correctly, but I think we'll leave that to the professional philosophers to decide. And actually, I think that who was the guy that I sent you the YouTube video, the book guy, the
Zero Books
guy might be a third category here, because I think that some serious professional philosophers might want to reflect on Jordan Peterson's formulation of the tension between order and chaos and the role of the logos in the origin of reality and being and all of that. And then the way that is reflected in the structure of being and the bioevolutionary process. But I think that there are other philosophers who take issue with some of his almost subtle dismissal of rational thought, and who have a different set of presuppositions, and who might actually bounce off against Jordan Peterson to restate their own perspective on the kinds of presuppositions that are necessary and or appropriate to formulate a proper coherent philosophy of all things. And I'm pretty sure that there are people doing that. I think that like you've often said, that there are some people that are reluctant to put their perspective out in the public realm. You know, they have a lot to lose in terms of professional status, but I think that Jordan Peterson is able to stir some of those interests also, in the same way that you and I have been, you know, have paid attention to his unique new hermeneutic style. So also I think that among professional philosophers, there are people who will pay attention to what he is saying about that and probably communicate that on their own very closely guarded YouTube channels.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see. So I think there's a number of dynamics. One, I hear regularly from non-tenured professors in the U.S. and Canada who they like my channel, they like what I'm doing, they engage a little bit. I say, I invite them. I say, you want to do an online conversation? No, I don't have tenure. There really is in the university a fear of being too closely associated with Jordan Peterson. I think there are both armchair philosophers and professional philosophers who have plenty of criticisms and critiques of Peterson. Now, it's the nature of academia to kvetch and yeah, but, and recalibrate and fine tune and critique. That's just the nature of academia. So that's normal. Part of what's been so, what I think part of the real gift that Jordan Peterson has been to the last couple of years has been the way he has energized so many lay people to be interested in philosophy, that actually the professional philosophers should be sending Jordan Peterson gifts, whether or not they think he does philosophy well, but just for re-stirring excitement about the humanities.
Yeah. In the same way that Christians have returned to looking at the Bible in the same way. I mean, there's probably more people enrolling in philosophy classes right now as a result of Jordan Peterson.
That's right. And buying books and watching YouTube videos. It's, you know, I don't know. YouTube is new, so it's hard to know. And I often think about the difference between books and video watching or audiobooks. I can't in my lifetime remember, I've never been aware of a movement quite like this one, where on a significant level, regular people, you know, we experience this in our meetups, regular people want to talk about what topics that would be considered nerdy or esoteric or egg-headed, or regular people want to talk about philosophy and religion and sociology in an integrated fashion. For, you know, again, Sunday night, you and I both have meetups, and Sunday nights are usually big ones for us. You know, we'll have 15 to 20 people there, and we'll split up into three groups, and people sometimes ask, well, how do you run your meetups? You know, off they go. You just have a little thing to go, and off they talk, and 2 hours is gone like this, and then I'll kind of close the official meeting and say, I'm kicking you out at 10 or 11. And, you know, some will leave, but some will be there. I've never closed the church alone. So this is a huge thing. And again, I think we have Jordan Peterson to thank for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get back to that later, the meetup thing. But I think that what we're talking about philosophers is also true in the whole world of psychology, where academic psychologists, I think we can just do shorthand here, we don't even have to get into the details, professional academic psychologists are probably looking over his shoulder and not wanting to disclose their identity in public for tenure reasons. But then there is also a whole bunch of clinicians who I think are paying attention to the fact that Jordan Peterson actually has been able somehow to stir up some new energy in a clinically depressed group of people, you know, I know there was a discussion earlier about what is more appropriate to say, failing to thrive or seeking to thrive. Whatever they are, there is a sense there that, hey, I need a kick in the ass, and he actually gave him that. Yep. And which clinical psychologist thinks of himself as a person who can tell a large group of people to sort themselves out, and they go out and do it?
Yeah.
I mean, that is an amazing thing, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How well they do it and how lasting and sustainable it is all remains to be seen. And there's a lot of details there that have yet to be uncovered. But this is a remarkable thing, and people are paying attention to that.
Yeah.
So then there is somebody in your notes, in your comments online, added this category. That is the mothers of the above-described millennials who come in at least two forms. There is those who are eager to understand the possible reasons why their underperforming sons fail to thrive and who read the 12 rules in the privacy of their bedrooms. That's one group of mothers. And then there is the other more controlling types who see in Jordan B. Peterson an ally in their never-ending quest to finally get Johnny out of the house, and who intentionally leave 12 rules laying around the house in strategic places for Johnny to find and read and then get out.
I think there are some mothers and fathers in that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand that. I'm just being facetious.
No, I like that. And I think that's true. I think there are some mothers out there just waiting for their sons to find Jordan Peterson.
Yeah.
And hoping, okay, you're gonna listen to these videos and what are you gonna think? Are you gonna sort yourself out? Are you gonna clean your room? It's a mess.
Yeah.
At least that. You know, they've been working on the kid for 20 years to get him to clean his room unsuccessfully. And
here's this guy from Toronto, and he's able to make it happen for some families.
That's right.
Praise the Lord.
That's right. Some mothers will be bitter because, yeah. Well, I've been telling you to clean your room all these years, and Jordan Peterson comes around, and da, 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 da. Now he does this stuff. What was I?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. I hear you. So now, then it brings the story to us, Paul.
Oh, we're on the list?
We're on the list. Yeah, know that we are. The social engineers, the Ooh. Pastors, and other incessant meddlers. Who attempt to co-opt JVP's notoriety for their own nefarious purposes.
That's right.
But in all seriousness, I mean, I can think of two. I mean, I wrote down two here. The people who hitch their wagon through JVP's status on YouTube, thereby seeking to elevate their own status on that platform and elsewhere, either for, take your pick, ideological purposes, financial gain, or as an expression of their own OCD need to mess with people. Paul, are you willing to identify yourself as one of these three groups?
Oh, absolutely. My own nefarious purposes. And it's very interesting because early on when I started the channel, there were a lot more comments like that. I think a lot of those people just kind of, they don't want to, why leave a comment like that? And so the comments have less of that. But early on, there were a lot of them in terms of, yeah, another pastor wants to grow his church with Jordan Peterson.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Church hasn't grown much.
But it does raise the question. Yeah, it does raise the question. And then I'm looking a little bit more at myself. I don't have a church to grow. But there is also those who, for you know, use JBP's popularity as a tool for community organizing. And I am a community organizer. I mean, I use Meetup or some other platform, in my case, Meetup. And then again, it raises the question, why? Is that for ideological purposes? Is it for financial gain or as an expression of my own OCD need to mess with people?
Is that what you call it?
What's that?
Is that what you call what you do, your OCD need to mess with people?
No, it is one of three reasons that I attributed that. I made it a random three options. It is either for ideological purposes or financial gain or an expression of somebody's OCD need to mess with people. And then you can say, you could also say, I do it because I'm a servant and I want to serve people. And it is my calling and my God-given responsibility to serve people. But then the burden is on us to talk about and to be very clear about how does this actually serve people. How do they benefit from our antics? How do they seriously? No, I mean, this is an important question. What gain in the end is there from our attempt to mess with their heads? No. In my case, I just finished reading this book, Disconnected, by Thomas Kersting. And then he talks about how a whole swath of kids are so tied into their screen time that they can't function in society anymore.
Yeah.
And so for me, it is terribly important to give people the opportunity to meet face to face, to meet other human beings, to actually look them in the eye and talk about what they truly believe, to be authentic with one another, to not have to worry too much about political correctness, and to be in each other's company as human beings together in the same space. For me, that is a high value. I think you try to do the same thing on your YouTube channel. It is a different kind of space that you embody, but ultimately it's the same thing. And you also do the meetups on top of that, so you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we wouldn't do it if we didn't hear, you know, I don't have five people when I go to the grocery store stop me and say, oh, you've helped me by your YouTube channel. But people do write me and express their gratitude. And some people even send me money, which still blows my mind. Although I think it's a devious plot to get me financially dependent upon doing this so I'll never stop. But thank you for the support.
Yeah.
but no, you're right. Because one of the things that I was amazed at with our meetups was how quickly a number of people were very devoted to this practice. And it obviously was meeting a deep need.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And that took me, you know, obviously with church, I mean, we're all about that with church, but the meetups, I thought, wow, that's interesting. And so the same with the channel. I'm deeply gratified and humbled by people who just want to thank me for doing this. And
or even just thank us by showing up.
Oh, yes.
You know, because in a way, even their showing up is a way of saying, hey, you know, you're scratching me where I itch and I want to be part of that.
Yeah.
And I think that you're right in that within that group, there is always going to be some, and I've already noticed that too, who see this as sufficiently valuable that they want to contribute to it in their own way and make the thing gel and bring pizza and you know, run the group in my absence or whatever. You know, there's all kinds of people that are eager to contribute in whatever form they can. And I don't really want to overinterpret financial support, because I think that a lot of people do that from very pure motives and a very sincere sense of gratitude. No, and true. I think that we need to acknowledge and value that. Yeah. And so I'm not fishing for any kind of financial contributions right now. I hope they all keep going to you, and then you can keep doing what you're doing. But I have free space for my meetup. You know, we don't have to collect any money for the space rental. I have the participation of my homeowners association, and they allow me to use the clubhouse for this kind of thing. And it is actually a wonderful arrangement. We have a very excellent facility, very comfortable. And so I'm very grateful for that. But I think that in some fashion, there is a way in which this kind of being together fills a need for community in people that in previous times may have been met by their affiliation with the church in previous times. And right now that, you know, this whole notion of bowling alone, that book that came out some years ago talking about the social isolation in society because of the way we structure our lives. I think there is a real pushback to that right now, in that even atheists want to get together and have atheist worship services. I mean, it's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's one of these ideals that we have, like buying a gym membership in January and never going to the gym.
Yeah,
I think people are beginning to realize that if they're going to achieve some of these aspirations, they're going to need deeper levels of accountability and community to clean their rooms and grow up and so on and so forth. And that's one of the things that I don't know that we've touched on it a bit in some of our meetups, but our meetups have never really been a support group. One member of our meetup continues to remind me. So we have some people who come and have PhDs and are academics and love philosophy. And sometimes he reminds me, says, you know, sometimes our meetups are just a little too esoteric, and you know, do you need a graduate degree just to come and converse with this thing? And does that intimidate and keep other people away? And so
Well, that is actually precisely the reason why this whole facets of Jordan Peterson followers has kind of come to my awareness, and that I'm actually thinking that it would be wonderful if at some point there was enough critical mass in the meetups so that you could kind of subdivide it a little bit in accordance with people's unique interests and level of engagement, or maybe I shouldn't say level of engagement, but the specific area of interest that has triggered their interest in Jordan Peterson, so that a whole bunch of psychologists could get together and talk about his clinical style or his theory of personality, and a bunch of philosophers could get together and have that conversation, and a bunch of Christians could kind of duke it out about his hermeneutic or whatever. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to fragmentize it to any great degree, and I am very self-conscious that somebody somewhere, I think it was again in your comments on our previous conversation, or in your conversation about the earlier iteration of these facets, somebody said, "What's next? A questionnaire?" You know. but yeah, in a way, it would be nice to have some idea of who these people are and what is their level of commitment and what is their specific area of interest, because to bring those people together in a specific context, I think would serve a purpose. It would serve a meaningful purpose. Yeah. And that is not to rule out their participation in the larger, more general group. They could still cross-fertilize there also.
Right.
But yeah. So I came up with this last item that is not even on your list there, and that is people who are disillusioned by the tone and content, as well as the ideological skewedness of the conventional media, and who have hitched their wagons to the intellectual dark web, and who see in Jordan Peterson a particularly entertaining or informative or credible participant in that new game in town. And that way, it would not be so much Jordan Peterson and his specific content, but simply their migrating from one media format to another media format, and there Jordan Peterson would just be one channel among many on the intellectual dark web.
Yeah.
I think one of the interesting things about the intellectual dark web is the engagement that the various members have with one another, and the kinds of cross conversations that are happening there, which you see much less of on the news, although even as I say it, I see an awful lot of CNN on Fox News, but it's probably always interpreted. Wait a minute. Let's not go there. I don't want to talk about that.
No,
you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, the new media. And one of the things that I noted is the high percentage of people who watch my channel who work in IT.
Yeah.
Or have long commutes, or I have an iTunes and a podcast version of my that I duplicate what I do on YouTube, and so that for them, that showed the poverty of traditional media for new technology, new contexts. And no, I think that's right. It's to me one of the interesting questions. So Peterson said on his 2018 summary, sold 2.5, 2.7 million books, and it's going to be translated into other languages. What? I don't know how YouTube changes us. And I don't know that we can know that yet. But I've noticed that I had to, in a sense, I was a big listener of audiobooks and of podcasts. And then when I found Jordan Peterson, I kind of adjusted my life to do YouTube, to listen to a lot of YouTube content. I learned how I could do that, fit that in with the rest of my life. And then I began noticing how a bunch of my other opinions started to change, because I'm devouring hours and hours of content from specific people. And as human beings, we are very much formed. So I found myself being formed by these new voices, unlike some of the other voices that had probably been forming me all along, which always makes me pause and say, huh, is this a good thing? Am I actually being a good steward over my attention and giving my time to the better voices available to me? And I think we've only just begun. Tim Pool did a very interesting video on the question, is YouTube radicalizing? And I thought he gave an excellent answer that no, probably not. But it is changing the world. And one of the things, I do long content partly because it takes way more time than I have to do short content. But I also began to realize that long content also adds influence in the little tiny pool that I'm working in. So there's a lot to this point that I think Peterson is dead on right. We are just at the beginning of this and really don't know where this is going.
No, and I would like to echo in similar vein, we don't really know where meetups are going, because that is another way for people to gather around a common theme or activity or interest. Meetups, as you well know, exist for all kinds of reasons, to find people to go biking with, people to play cards with, people to climb a mountain with, or people to discuss politics with, or people to discuss Jordan Peterson with. And I have two Jordan Peterson groups that I'm the organizer of, and it adds to a total of about 150 people. But as has been pointed out in the past, not all these 150 people all show up at our meetings. So the relationship between belonging to a meetup group and attending meetup events is in flux. That's kind of a poorly understood thing at this point. Much like you don't really know how many of your subscribers actually pay attention to every word you say. Yeah. There are some theories about that. And so that can only be ferreted out over time. And but I think that to have this kind of conversation about, you know, who are these people and why are they on our radar, it's kind of helpful, because I think that we may be able to tweak the structures of our efforts in the direction that it meets a greater number of needs to the population we're trying to serve. And so I'm kind of excited about what you're doing. Not kind of, I'm super excited about what you're doing. And I want to thank you for the way your videos support my efforts to gather my tribe here in Southern California. We're going to have another meeting again on Sunday night. I hope to see a lot of people there. And we have not yet been in a position where we needed to split up. We've just been able to manage all the people together. But if enough people show up, we have the room, we have the facilities to spread out in the area where we gather. And so, and I know that's true for you also. And I'm excited about what's going to happen Sunday night.
Yeah. Oh, me too. I look forward to every single meetup we do. And after, you know, Sundays are big days for me, obviously, because I'm preaching all morning and doing everything. And then the evening, I'm spending the whole evening with these folks, but I'm always glad I did. And I always come away feeling I've learned, I've grown closer to people, I've experienced community, and it's just been a delight. So anything you want to add before we shut down the recording?
Well, you can stop the recording. I have two other things I want to run past you, and then you can decide for yourself if you want to record that, but you can at least separate it out.
Okay. seeing as I hate video editing, so.
Oh, okay. Well, then goodbye, Paul. Don't go away.